When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is One Heat Minute.
Drop of a hat, these guys were rock and roll.
What's your name?
Wayne Grove.
Look like gangbangers working the local 7-Eleven to you. Robbery, homicides, take me out.
Give me all you got! This and give me all you got!
I do what I do best. I take scores. You do what you do best, trying to stop guys like me.
A podcast dedicated to all 170 minutes of Michael Mann's LA crime opus Heat, 1 minute at a time. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to One Heat Minute. I am your host, Blake Howard, and joining me across Skype is, you know, again, it's a great pleasure to have so many awesome folks around the world who are Heat fans. And one of them I have on the Skype line today is Mark Searby, who is an author of an Al Pacino, perhaps the definitive Al Pacino book. I'll say that for you, Mark. The definitive Pacino book, Al Pacino, The Movies Behind the Man. He's also a film critic, a music critic for places like Heat Magazine over in the UK, you know, the massively popular Heat Magazine. Freelancers, radio, film criticism, music criticism, all over the place. But reached out because of his untamable love for Pacino, and in fact that his favorite Pacino performance is in Heat. And so I am super excited to have Mark on the line with us. Mark, thank you so much for being part of One Heat Minute.
Well, thank you for having me on, Blake. I mean, that is quite an introduction. I don't think I can do myself justice now that you've bigged me up so big, you know, so much. I'm slightly worried about how it's going to go. But no, thank you for having me on. I have released a book, Al Pacino Movies Behind the Man. It is an in-depth book. It's nearly 700 pages about every single film that the man has made. It's got nearly 60 exclusive interviews in there. So for Heat, I interviewed Wes Studi. He's got some great stories. I'm not going to give them away, but he's got some great, great stories. But yes, I have not loved in the sense of, you know, I generally love them. Like, I love my girlfriend, but I've loved Al Pacino as an actor since, oh, blimey, probably my mid-teens, so around 94, something like that. I remember constantly watching Scent of a Woman, constantly watching it, like every weekend. And then I slowly decided, right, I'm going to buy his films. This was at the time of VHS, so I spent money buying his films and then transfer, and then obviously getting rid of those and buying the DVDs. And then somebody, an old editor of mine, said, look, you know more about Al Pacino than anybody. You should write a book. And that's where it started. And that was 3 years ago. And it's, I mean, the book came out in the summer. Fantastic response. I mean, I was blown away by the response. I really was. I wasn't sure if anybody was ever going to take to it, or even they've been incredibly way by it. Have been taken aback by.
Well, Mark, I'm losing you.
Huge labor of love going. So I will put out a third edition. Man's still making films, you know, we've films to come from him. But yes, you were saying that Heat. Before I started writing the book, I always said Scent of a Woman was my favorite Al Pacino film. And then I went and saw Heat in the cinema here in the UK, in London's West End, on an original print, a 70mm print, and it changed my mind. I said, no, this is the definitive Al Pacino performance. And when you couple that with De Niro and John Voight and Val Kilmer and, you know, director man, it changed my mind completely. I came away that night, I think it finished just before midnight, and I've changed my mind completely. This is the film.
See, it's so funny because, like, even when I was just looking at the people that you've interviewed, Mark, for your novel, it's really, like, when you say a definitive Pacino performance, and I agree with you, I'm right up there, but even just glancing, you know, interviewing Lowell Bergman for The Insider, you know, you interviewed Jerry Schultzberg for The Panic in Needle Park. You know, these, like, this guy's resume is intimidating to his own self. You know, it's like when Pete, it's the same battle that, you know, the real phenomenal and enduring sort of performers have. You know, you say, oh, what's the best De Niro performance? And, you know, I absolutely think Neil McCauley's up there. But I'm also, I'm sure I could equally be argued for about three other performances. Same with Streep across her entire career. Pacino here, too. It's, you know, such a phenomenal actor, and across, you make me forget about how good, I just remembered how good he was in Panic in Needle Park. Like, holy dooly, is he good. Dog Day, rolls straight from Dog Day, Serpico, Godfather Part 2. Man, what an incredible career. But no, look, I'm folks, I'm lucky. I'm looking forward to checking out Mark's book. But we're here right now in the 46th minute of Heat. This is the 46th episode. Thank you so much for being a part of it right now. And if you're a first-time listener to One Heat Minute, welcome. You've only got 45 episodes to catch up on. So thank you so much. This is the show where we examine Michael Mann's masterpiece, Heat, 1 minute at a time. And the minute that I've chosen today to chat to Mark with is the moment of the film where we have Al Pacino arriving in Koreatown to meet with Albert's brother, who's played by Tone Loke. We would have seen Albert, Ricky Whittle. You saw him some time ago in the film. Now we've got plenty of minutes in, but really the investigation up into the following moments of this film is completely lost. So here we get to see Vincent sort of strutting up to Koreatown at like 2 a.m. in the morning, quite frustrated at the time, and we'll get to dive into some more detail. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play that minute for us right now, Mark and I, and then we're going to come back with you guys, and we're going to talk about it in just a minute. So thank you.
Give me all your money.
One day you're going to get smoked with that shit.
Oh, ain't gonna be you, fool.
Coming in alone, sending two.
Get got it.
Vincent, hey, man. Vincent. Hey, Vincent, it's my brother, Richard, Vincent.
Richard. So what do you got for me?
All right. A good minute, Mark.
Yes. It's one of those minutes where, as we heard, there's very little dialogue, yet it is Pacino walking with anger and with vigor and with purpose. And, you know, you kind of think that walking in a film is probably quite easy. We do it every day. It's pretty simple. But when you have the intensity of an actor like Pacino, it changes the entire structure of a film, because all of a sudden you're going, wow, okay, this guy
is really after these people. He clearly is completely pissed off with them as well. And that's what you get. As soon as that starts, that moment, you're like, whoa, he is angry, seriously angry. And yeah. I think that is one of those moments. You know, we see it throughout the film that he's angry. He's always angry. But I think that, you know, this is the first time where we see him on his own, pissed off. And he's ready to, I mean, he's not going to kill somebody, but it's close.
Well, I love what you said there with his vigor and purpose. And for me here, he's in his car alone. It's got that thumping beat. And as his head's down and he's walking up, he's, I think in that moment, he's becoming the Vincent that's about to go into a club at 2 a.m. and get a result. You know what I mean? Like, I think, so for me, a lot of time when people have criticized the Pacino performance because of like the tones, the shifts, the mania. I think this moment's such a great moment to examine and say, okay, look, you can look at the polls in isolation, or look at the minutes of a film in isolation, for example, but look at the polls of his character in isolation and you miss the connective tissue. And I think that this is that great moment where it's a bridge between this fierce loner, who is probably got some weird introversion issues when he's by himself, but this is the guy who's now about to go and peacock again and put on a bit of a performance. And so the kind of cool thing is you get a little bit of behind the curtain. He sees this bouncer, and this bouncer knows that he's, you know, he's frequenting this establishment. They clearly know he's a cop because he's allowed to waltz through without having to go through the metal detector. But I just love, you know, you sort of get that little behind the scenes moment with him there with the bouncer, but he's all business. You're right. The minute he comes out of that elevator, all of the gearing up, all of the car ride, all of that potential frustration, he is ready to rock and roll from that minute. And it moves with pace, him getting into this club and it moving along.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to that bouncer thing, the interesting thing about that is, obviously, he says to him, give me all your money. And clearly the recognition is there that, hey, it's Vincent Hanna. So do we determine from that Vincent Hanna's been to this nightclub before, or that he knows this bouncer from before? Now, if he knows the bouncer from before, why does he know him? You know, there's so many questions, even in that brief section.
And a great question. And look, I'm going to, if you haven't yet, and I hope that you have, listened to our sneak peek of the Pasquale Boober episode, which is upcoming, or you're not a fan of the Movie Crypt podcast, you should be. Go and subscribe right now with Joe Lynch, who was a guest on a massive double episode that we did. Pasquale Boober talked right now in this scene that at the 20th anniversary, when Al Pacino revealed that Vincent Hanna was originally a character who was going to cop cocaine, who was on cocaine, he cops cocaine in this scene. So, Mark, you're absolutely spot on that originally, as it was conceived, there's some great questions, just an additional bit of flavor that without this, even without the cocaine, even though that now it's just a massive hypothetical that hangs over this performance in the film, I love exactly that in a really great film, is sometimes you meet a character, you don't even know their name. We don't even know this guy's name. But he's that little bit of texture, a little bit of flavor, a little bit of insight into our character that he does know some strange characters. He does frequent nightclubs at 2 a.m. to interrogate rats. He does. He may be doing some cheeky things on the side that he shouldn't be doing to sort of salve any of the weird issues that he has being completely antisocial. So, yeah, I really, really fascinating stuff. And I love that. Exactly like you said. How does he know this guy? What is the kind of guy that knows this guy?
Yeah, well, obviously, we take that immortal line from Taxi Driver, the freaks come out at night. Well, you know, realistically, Vincent Hanna is a freak because, as you rightly point out, he has two sides to him. Early on in the film, we see him. He's a family man. You know, he's there. He's dancing with Justine. He's taking care of his stepdaughter, obviously played by Natalie Portman. And you think, okay, this is a different policeman. You know, this is not the standard cliche policeman. And then I think with this moment, as you rightly point out, like, everything changes and you realize, okay, he is I guess to a certain degree, a standard cliched cop who is on the take, and as we've now found out, on drugs. But there is something different about this performance than the standard cliched police that we see in virtually every single film. You know, it, as I said, it is that intensity that Pacino brings to it. And as soon as he walks into that club, listen to what the music, listen to the music. It's House of Pain.
Yeah.
Now, is that, you know, I mean, that's such a clever choice.
Yes.
Because the lines in that song refer to, you know, the like a pulsating person, not pulsating person, but, you know, somebody who is pushing their way through and it doesn't matter. And, you know, the lines in the song, we're going to swear, we don't care about it. And that perfectly fits with the strides that Vincent Hanna is doing in the scene. So as soon as he walks in, you can feel the beats actually match him when he puts his foot down as well. And then we've got the lyrics matching him as well, because as you said, by that time, the drugs are in his system. He's doing it. I mean, not to give anything away, but the next minute, he put some chewing gum into his mouth and starts chewing on it, which is obviously, you know, a great tactic to stop him chewing his face. but it is one of those moments where you think everything has just lined up. As soon as that drawbridge or whatever it's called for the lift opens, the music starts, bang, and you know it's House of Pain because of how they sing. And then it matches every single moment all the way through. And even when Albert turns around, you can kind of see him go, oh, shit, he's here.
But this is the question I want to ask you, Mark, and I love this, is, you know, we've obviously, you're a massive Pacino fan. I'm a massive Pacino fan and a Heat fan. You're like a, you know, world championship level. But if we watch, because we've watched this film a lot, in this moment, we struggle to, and this is what I like about this process, is in this moment, Albert is, we think Albert has been talking out of his ass. Like the entire interaction that he has, my brother Richard's going to talk to you. Like we've been through that moment and we're going, there's no way conceivably that Richard is going to drop the lead. Now we've seen this movie so many times that we know that Tone Loc delivers that. This slick ain't no joke, man. And we're just like, oh my God, like this is the, he picks up on like the tiniest needle in this House of Pain, Koreatown dungeon nightclub of a haystack. And it leads us into what is the rest of this amazing crime epic. But just think of the guy who already thinks that Albert is completely talking out of his ass, that's willing at 2 a.m. to go to Koreatown to try and talk to his brother who was in Phoenix. Like, you just keep going, and you're, that's what I like to keep going back, and you have a look at the level of commitment and or desperation on his side for that, for being able to conquer, being able to solve this problem, solve the riddle. So yeah, it's really on the criminal side, you see the extremity with which Neil will go to make things be executed to perfection, and if it means killing some cops or killing security guards or whatever he has to do, he'll do it. But here, I think it's a really great illustration of Vincent, because we all know what's coming up. Anyone who's listening to this podcast, most likely you've seen Heat. I know one person, one of our guests, Rose Powell, has not seen Heat and is going to wait to watch the whole movie until after she's listened to the whole show. So it's going to be really interesting for you, Rosie, listening. So if you are, thank you. Really strange for me to distance myself, but it's only in talking to you now, I'm like, this lead was a dead end. You know, we only know it's important and we know it's not a dead end because we're watching it, but it's he's dealing with it like it's not every potential lead could be something. Really strange though when you think about it.
Yeah, and also if you think about the amount of films and the amount of TV shows that have police detectives like this, do you think they would have followed that lead up? That lead, that scene that we're talking about now would not have appeared in 99% of TV shows. It would have appeared in something like The Wire, guaranteed.
100%.
Because as it leads on to something. You know, it is, you kind of think it's not an important scene, but it is. It's an intelligent scene. And this is the thing with Mann, is that he makes intelligent films for people who want to, what we class as, lean in to the film. You know, you want to know about it. You're not sat there going, okay, give me all the information so I don't have to take it all in. But this is what happens. And I think you going back to it saying, it's a desperation from Hannah. I think it is. I think it's a desperation of a man for two reasons. One, he clearly wants to take down McCauley. There's no two ways about it. And if it means going to a club at 2 a.m., that's what he's going to do. However, I think it is also more desperation of a man who doesn't want to be at home, because by that time, he's fallen out with Justine. The stepdaughter has kind of disappeared. We know obviously what comes later on, but she's kind of disappeared. He doesn't want to be at home with his own thoughts. Yeah. So if that means he is going to be in a club at 2 a.m., doing drugs but also getting the results, he's gonna do that. Then he's gonna be up at 6 a.m to go to the office and say, I was in the club at 2 a.m where were you? And they're gonna say, well, we were all in bed. You know, why are you chasing these non-existent leads?
Vincent, we are normal people. Yes. And I think his guys are wily enough to know that that's just what he's willing to do. But yeah, it's really, you know, there's a whole stack of you know, and this is what's so powerful. I mean, the central cafe scene, which we're going to get to in the middle of this, in the middle of this project, is such an actor's lesson from both these guys, just on gesture and getting the physicality of a character, and also, you know, conveying that on screen. But I just love the little touches early on in this scene more than anything. I love his touching of his tie just before he comes around the corner. I love how he's opening and closing his hands. There's a pace. I love the word you said, vigor. There's a vigor with that. And then there is a little bit of that cool sort of kooky relaxation where he's like, give me all your money. And he's a bit more relaxed. But then as soon as he gets up that elevator, there's intent, there's purpose. He's carving his way through. He's the weirdest looking guy in this, what looks like a completely African-American crowd at 2 a.m. Young people excited, happily listening to House of Pain, wearing terrible, oversized 90s clothes, and all brown. There's not a person who's not wearing brown except for Vincent in this entire club. So, yeah, it's a really interesting sort of great visual as far as what's organic. He's very steely. Everything else is very sort of warm and nice to be there, but he's none of that. I think I can almost agree with you that this is the best Pacino performance, because so much of the detail that he puts into Hannah for me is so rewarding on going back for exactly scenes like this. It doesn't have to be the gimme all you gots, and it doesn't have to be the great asses. For me, it's these little, just the, you know. You know, this is the guy at the peak of his powers. There's no, he's not just in one lane. He's not in one gear. This is the whole person. And I wonder if that's what makes him so good as Hannah, is that, you know, and it's the same with Lowell Bergman. He's like follow up performance in The Insider. It's like, you see how good he is, and you start to think, is he really like this guy? Like, is he really like a Vincent Hanna? And then you see him do a Lowell Bergman and you're like, oh, no, he's not. He's not like that. Yeah. But he's just good. He just acts really well.
Well, I mean, if we talk about the performance, let's go all the way back briefly to The Godfather Part 2, which was not shot in sequence. And when I interviewed the producer, Gray Fredrickson, for my book, he said, because it wasn't shot in sequence, Pacino had to know the headspace that Michael Corleone was going to be at that time of filming. So whether it was whether they shot the early part, you know, where obviously he where Fredo, you know, gets killed, he has to be in that space. But then later on, when they're filming, he has to be in the headspace of being quite jovial or something else like that. And Gray Fredrickson said, you will never see an actor be able to do that, to know the headspace of the character when it's not being shot in sequence. And I think that's what we get with Pacino's performance in this film. He's clearly understanding the headspace of Vincent Hanna and where he needs to be at these moments in time, yet it's not being shot in sequence. I mean, can you imagine starting filming this? Michael Mann says, right, okay, we're going to start quite easily. We're going to start with the end sequence. And you think, what? How is this possible? You know, I mean, it. But this is the brilliance of obviously an actor like Pacino, also De Niro, you know, but De Niro does it as well. But I mean, it's one of those moments that just, it boggles the mind to think an actor can find that character's headspace and know where he's going to be within 6 months of the story arc, but that's going to be the first day of filming. It's incredible to think of something like that.
But I think that's what suits maybe him to the ground with Hannah, though, because Hannah is a performer. So, you know, Hannah has a face for, I think, you know, some of the more sincere and honest and sort of deep cuts, who Hannah is, are those scenes with Justine. You know, the scenes with Justine where he's not, there's no performance in it. And then what's great is that he realizes this beautiful halfway point. Maybe it's the realest we get to see him in the cafe scene across from Macaulay when he kind of meets his match. There's that fantastic sort of candor that's happening. But I think what's great about this moment, it's almost like a mini essay on Pacino's method. Like he's gearing, you know, Hannah is like, he knows who his audience is going to be, and his audience are usually rats or snitches or potential suspects. And for all of those people, they get the completely out of control, over the top, in your face, Hannah. and his crew play straight man. Like, they're all playing Dean Martin and he's playing Jerry Lewis. And so, but it's very intentional. Like, and these scenes are the scenes of the bread and butter, the foundations where you go, yeah, it's a performance. Like, he's performing Vincent Hanna as this manic psycho to these guys to keep them on their toes and to hopefully be unpredictable. Then you get these fantastic little windows into that, because you're like, oh, this is behind the curtain. Like, that's why I think this whole sequence, later on, I talk more to Pascal Buber about this actual sequence being a difficult scene for them to continue the pace. You know, Heat bubbles along with a rhythm that many, many films would struggle to keep with. You know, it's 170 odd minutes long, including the credits. And every time you've watched it, it feels like you've been watching 90 minutes. You know, it flies. And so what's cool about this scene is that it does so much, but it maintains that sort of relentless pace that this movie has, and it never feels like it's in a rush, but at the same time, it never feels like it slows down. You don't have a chance to hold your breath. There's just scene after scene, wave after wave. But yeah, that's you know, maybe something to read in your book, or I'd love to, you know, talk to you about it, Mark. It's like this Hannah's performance, Pacino playing Vincent Hanna, playing the different versions of Vincent Hanna. It's like Bruce Wayne, Batman, you know. It's like, which one is he going to put on?
I do wonder if the actual ex-Chicago detective was anything like Hanna. So, you know, the whole story is based on a story that actually happened to an ex-Chicago detective. Did you know this, Blake?
Yes, I did. But please, I love when anyone brings this up, simply because it's so amazing. When you think about, if you've ever had an idea, if you've ever had a thought, you know, a desire to do something, I love this because it's something that pays off such a long time after the actual event happened. So, yeah, please.
Well,
please,
this is the thing, you know, I mean, Chuck Adamson is the character who Vincent Hanna is based on. He was an ex-Chicago detective and became friends with Michael Mann. I think it was through conducting research for Starsky and Hutch initially, but then it went on to Miami Vice. And Adamson had started to talk to Mann about different things, different cases that he'd worked on. And one of them was basically the entire centerpiece for Heat. So he was involved in this real life hunt for a criminal called Neil Macaulay in the 1950s and 60s in Chicago. And they actually had this sit down in this restaurant. And I mean, I'm trying to find the quote here. Yeah. So, Neil Macaulay replied back to Adamson and said, after Adamson said, look, I'm going to stop you no matter the cost. Neil Macaulay replied back and said, well, look at the other side of the coin. I might have to eliminate you. And then a year later, that's actually what happened, in that Adamson took him down in a supermarket, no less. But it actually happens. And as you said, you know, man's formulating all of these ideas all of the time. And he had written a script for Heat in 1983 and then put it in a drawer and went off to work on a few other bits. And then he went off to do The Keep, which obviously wasn't a great success. Then eventually, obviously, he went to do LA Takedown, and that wasn't a massive success. And somehow he managed to convince people, look, I can do this better. I can do this much better. Okay. Yes, Mr. Man, we'll give you the money, but who are you going to get in the lead roles? Well, you know how we had two unknowns in LA Takedown? I'm thinking in this, we'll have Al Pacino and Robert De Niro.
And you give me $60 million and Final Cut. $60 million and Final Cut. And I'm going to get the two guys who, you know, two of America's greatest living actors all together, pretty much at the peak of their powers. In a movie where they're mano a mano, literally, you know, living out the conversation that people have been having about who's the best forever, yes. and they go in the money. But that's, you know, there's so much in that. And Hannah from accounts and what I can read, and there's from everything that I've read, there's no name that's been attributed directly to this person, but Hannah is absolutely based on Adamson in as much as the story, but there's an FBI agent that Hannah was actually based on for not only Takedown, but for Heat. And he was very much the kind of guy who had a very extrovert personality and used his sort of verbose personality to manipulate interactions with criminals. So he would act crazy and put them off because he wasn't acting like a cop, so to speak.
Yeah.
Not all Adamson, absolutely. I think Adamson was a little bit more measured than the Vincent Hanna, you know, the performative mode. Maybe Adamson's that quiet guy, but absolutely right. You know, this was meant to be another tidbit. Potentially originally written to be shot in Chicago, and man picked it up and plonked it in LA to take it to the other side of the country and see if it changed it up. But yeah, gestated for many years based on that real interaction and that great conversation that we're going to get up to. But look, Mark, I mean, I think that is absolutely, If that's not a testament enough, folks, to read Mark's book, this guy knows his Pacino and knows his Heat and loves it. Mark, thank you so much for being a part of the show. This minute I have to cut us off now because we're about to lead into some thrilling minutes, and Tone Loke being a special guest. You're a music reviewer. You would love a bit of Tone Loke special guest starring in this as well. But look, I'm not gonna keep Mark around for this minute, but I am gonna ask while we're recording, so you guys know, Mark, would you love to come back? Because I've had a thrill chatting to you today, Mark. Could you come back and talk some more Pacino with us at some stage during the One Heat Minute epic that we're on?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, anytime you want me to come and talk about Al Pacino, I'm going to be there. This is the thing. And you want me to come and talk about Heat? Well, you don't need to twist my arm, Blake. Any single minute that you want me to come and talk about, I will happily do. And we can examine the master craftsmanship that is Michael Mann's Heat and the performances of everybody in it. You know, Pacino, De Niro, Kilmer, Sizemore, Voight, Williamson, Stewart. God, my voice is going. There's so many people, but I would love to come back. Absolutely.
Great. Look, guys, Mark Searby, if you're listening to this on iTunes or one of your other podcasting providers, jump over to oneheatminute.com. When you check out the episode link for the 46th minute, you'll check out a little bit about Mark. You'll see Mark's website and also see his book and where to buy it. You can buy it digitally or on hard copy if you like that new book smell, which I do. You can definitely do that. But Mark, thank you so much for being a part of One Heat Minute. We will see you again. I've loved this. There is so much we can talk about, but I think we've got to get to that next minute. Folks, I have been Blake Howard. Thank you so much again for subscribing to One Heat Minute. Please rate and review us on your podcast provider. We would love that. It helps get us out there. And recommend us to folks. The website is oneheatminute.com. Thank you to Garth Franklin for our web design. Thank you to Paul Davies for our music. And we'll catch you next time on an episode of One Heat Minute.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.